So anyway, I offered Ruth two talks, one based on a more traditional propagation of uncertainty study, and one on a LIDAR-assisted estimation problem, and she chose the latter. Let's see, where's the button? Okay. Page down? Oh, down arrow. Okay, the motivation here is for greenhouse gas inventories, particularly in tropical countries. The IPCC good practice guidance is very specific that uncertainties in the form of confidence intervals should be reduced to the degree practicable, and particularly that means that you can't reduce them until you first estimate them, and that you estimate them or construct them rigorously. And so that's what we want to focus on here. And traditional and familiar design-based, or what's called sometimes called probability-based inference, and by inference I mean hypothesis testing or construction of a confidence interval, requires probability samples with a randomization component. And sometimes that's very difficult for remote regions. And to some examples here I've given to the Amazon, but not only the Amazon West, where we focus a lot in the climate change community, but also Central Alaska, Northern Canada, and Siberia. Those are remote regions. It's very expensive to sample there. And when we want to try to do some kind of a randomization sampling, it gets difficult, if not impossible. So we need an alternative. And in particular, let's talk about two kinds of inference. The most familiar kind of inference that we all learned in Statistics 101 is what's called design-based inference, or sometimes probability-based inference. It's based on two assumptions. One is that for each population unit that you sample, there is one and only one possible value for that population unit, apart from some kind of measurement error. And secondly, the validity of design-based inference rests on a probability sample. That is, it has a randomization component, and therefore you can infer that it applies to the whole study area. A different approach is called model-based inference. And with model-based inference, we assume that there's a whole distribution of possible values that you could get by observing a population unit in a sample. And secondly, validity of the inference rests on the correct specification of the model, not a probability sample. Now, model-based inference may seem a little unfamiliar to you, but in fact, we've seen two examples of it already today. Ruth's presentation really incorporates model-based inferences, and Craig's study on allometric modeling is really model-based inference. The crucial issue here is that because validity rests on the specification of the model rather than on a probability sample, we don't need a randomized probability sample. We can use other kinds of samples. The second thing is that because there are multiple possible values, we calculate the traditional variances and standard errors in a different way. So with model-based estimators, we have a sample. We fit a model to that sample. In this case, here is my data. This is a LIDAR metric, and this is a growing stock volume of above-ground trees, which is easily convertible to biomass or carbon. But this is a model we use that's of this form, a very simple power model. And with model-based inference, we use the sample to construct the model. Then we fit the model to every single population unit. In this case, we characterize the prediction from the model as an estimate of a mean. It's the mean of the distribution of all possible values for a unit, okay, not just the single possible value. And secondly, then we add up all these predictions for every single population unit, divide it by the population size. So keep in mind that the population size here is n, whereas you'll see later the sample size is little n. Okay, so these models, this is how we get the estimate of the mean. We essentially use the model to predict for every population unit, add them all up, divide by the population size. That's our estimate of the population mean. Now, model-based variance estimators, remember I said we're a little different because of the assumption that there are the distribution of possible values, and in particular, this rather ugly, complicated mathematical stuff, and let me just touch on it for a second. This essentially is the variance-covariance matrix of the model parameters. This is the first derivative of the model with respect to the parameters, and for a linear model, these are just the x's, x1. Now, in this particular case, this is what the derivatives look like. Now, if you want to do model-based inference and you can't remember calculus, you either go to your favorite statistician or mathematician, or better yet, you probably talk to your 16-year-old who's taken AP calculus in school. They'll be able to do that for you. Okay, now, here's the crucial issue. The crucial issue is that this variance estimator depends both, depends both on the parameter estimates from the sample and the X values, because they show up in here. Now, on the one hand, that's kind of nasty because it makes it a more complicated expression. But on the other hand, it's very positive, because once we have the parameter estimates, we can pick the X values that minimize the variance. It gives us flexibility that we don't have in traditional design-based inference. Okay, so we can minimize the variance by selecting the sample units with the appropriate values of the predictor variables, the X variables, given the parameter estimates. So probability samples are not necessary. So I know the values of the predictor variables over the entire study area. All I have to do is find where in the study area the right X values are, and that's where I put my sample unit. Okay, so that's to keep in mind. But again, keep in mind the crucial point that the sample data are used only to construct the model, that the estimate is based on the predictions over all population units. Okay, so we're going to look at two features of sampling, sequential sampling. Sequentially sampling entails sampling in stages. And we can use it with any kind of modeling. Essentially says we take a partial sample, calculate the statistic of interest, and if it satisfies some criterion, that is, if the confidence interval is small enough, we stop. If it isn't, we take another stage of sampling, and we continue to do that until we get to where we want it to be. And then it avoids excessive sampling and thereby reduces costs. Now, for remote regions where we don't know much about the population, okay, we might be able to get some kind of an estimate of variance and get some kind of an estimate of an appropriate sample size, but maybe not. And because sampling in remote regions is so expensive, we don't want to do any more of it than is absolutely necessary. So with sequential sampling, we can minimize the amount of sampling till we get just where we want, and then we can stop. So, and again, it can be used with any form of sampling. Simple random sampling, stratified sampling, you pick, you name it. It can be used with any form of sampling. Okay, now, a second feature of sampling is called adaptive sampling. With adaptive sampling, again, it's a multi-stage approach. We take a particular sample, we calculate our statistic of inference, of interest, and then we ask ourselves, if I'm going to take another stage of sampling, where are the optimal places to put the sample units? Where are the X values that will do best to minimize my variance? And I can pick them. So I pick them and I take another stage and I add that to my first stage sample, put it all together, fit the model again, calculate the variance, and again, ask the same question. Where are the best X values? But again, I put that together then. Well, I mean, just got ahead of myself. When we know little about the model form or the parameter estimates, we select our initial sample so that it expands the whole range of the predictor variables. Okay? We don't want to get stuck with a poor sample that gives us bad estimates of the parameters. We want good estimates of the parameters to start. Then we will sample smaller sizes to narrow in and focus on until we get where we want. Okay, now we use multiple subsequent stages to refine the parameters and then continue to select the right values for the X variables, again, to converge to the optimal sample. Okay, and again, you can put these two together. After each stage of adaptive sampling, we can calculate the statistic of inference, the variance, the confidence interval, whatever you want. If it meets our criteria, stop. If it doesn't, take another stage. But again, putting sequential sampling and adaptive sampling together gives us an opportunity for remote regions to not sample any more than necessary, but given a particular sample, to minimize the variance. So again, remember that with with model-based sampling, the adaptive sampling here, the variance is not only based on the sample size, but the particular values of the X variables. Okay, so here's an illustration. We have forest inventory data for Itasca County, which is up in north central Minnesota. We have 115 FIA plots, and we're primarily interested in standing live tree volume, which can easily convert it to biomass or carbon. We have airborne laser scanning data for the entire county. Okay, and for this particular one, it turns out that the best predictor of all those LIDAR metrics is what's called quadratic mean diameter, and I showed you that graph previously. So we fit the model, okay, and we construct. Now, we use the actual data that we have to fit the model. Now, I apply that model to every population unit to get a prediction. Okay, that's going to be a simulated or an artificial population that I'm going to use for this study. And when I do that, I'm going to add a little uncertainty, a little error to it, because otherwise, you know, I'm always going to get the same value. That is, I know that my prediction isn't perfect. There's some uncertainty to it. Okay, so then I'm going to do all my sampling from this artificial or simulated population. All right, so this is Itasca County in north central Minnesota. These are where my plots are, and that's where I'm going to start. And I use the model to predict for every population unit, add some error, and that becomes my population for this study. And I'm going to sample from that population. So this quadratic mean diameter, okay, quadratic mean height, I'm sorry, for this study, it ranged from 0 to about 25. And I'm going to put that into 16 strata based on the values, 0 to 1, 1 to 2. These are all heights in meters. Heights in meters from the mean height in meter at the population unit level for each of those population units. And I'm going to sample from these many different times, and I'm just going to put all of the bigger ones together in the same stratum. So keep in mind, because it's important, we have these 16 strata, and we're going to sample from these strata. Okay, so the first thing I do is I select an initial sample consisting of one observation from each stratum. Okay, there are a couple of ways we're going to do that. I'll give you those details in a minute, but keep in mind, the first sample consists of one observation from each of those 16 strata. Okay, subsequent samples, after I get that initial strata, I'm going to fit the model, calculate the variance, and ask myself, which strata should I now sample from in order to make the variance as small as possible? And of course, each time the parameter estimates will change just a little bit, and those optimal strata may change just a little bit, but as time goes on, I should converge to the best sample. Okay, now I'm going to terminate sampling as soon as the ratio of the standard error over the estimate of the mean is less than or equal to 0.05. What that means is that the half width of the confidence interval will be plus or minus 10% of the mean, a reasonable criterion. Okay, so again, but remember now, I'm considering this to be a remote region. It's going to be hard to get to. It's going to be expensive to send field crews in there. There may not be any roads. They may only have to go on rivers. They may have to tromp through a lot of jungle or forest. So typically what I will do is I will establish a field crew location somewhere either on the boundary of that region or maybe even in the middle of it. And my field crews will work out of that location. So they will take one of these locations, they will go out in here, they will measure a few plots, and then they'll come back. Maybe they'll be out for a week, come back for the weekend, go back out again. So keep in mind I have these 9 possible locations. Now, some more details. How am I going to select the sample units? Well, as I said, for the initial sample, because I don't know what the model form is, I don't know what the parameters are, I'm going to take an initial sample with one observation from each of the 16 strata. And remember now, I'm model-based, I'm not probability or design-based, so I don't have to have a probability sample. And one of the things I want to do is minimize the distance the field crews have to travel. That reduces sampling costs. So for the initial sample, I'm going to pick one observation from each of the 16 strata in places that are closest to the field crew location. keeping in mind that the only thing I use the sample data for to construct the model. Okay, that's my initial sample. Get the sample, fit the model, calculate the variance. Okay, now, for each subsequent sample, one option is to continue selecting population units for the sample in the right strata that are closest to the field crew location. Okay. Maybe a little risky, but it's a completely valid, viable approach. Another one is to somehow randomize their location throughout the study area. So option two is to select, remember, in the first sample I have 16 strata. In the subsequent sample, I'm going to pick the four strata that do the best job of minimizing the variance. Okay. Now I'm going to pick one observation from each of those strata. With option one, I pick them closest to the field correlation location. With option two, I randomly pick a location from the whole study area for the first of those four strata. Then I pick the other three that are very close to that first one. Minimizing crew travel distance. Because as soon as they get one, they can get three more that are close by. And I'm picking four because, again, my field crews don't like to stay out there for weeks at a time. I'm going to send them out there. They're going to do their job. They're going to come back on the weekend. All right. So, again, here's an example of the first option. Now, remember, I've got 16 strata, but in my graphics, I didn't have 16 distinguishable colors. So this represents the initial strata of 16 observations. So this is the field crew location. Okay. So I need one observation in stratum one. So I find the one that the population unit whose quadratic mean diameter, okay, is within that stratum width. Pick that one. Then I find stratum two. Find the population units that's closest to the field crew location. Pick that as my next sample unit. So I continue to do that, get the first initial sample, calculate the variances, determine what the next four strata should be, okay, and I keep doing that until I meet my criteria. Okay, so, but again, remembering that the only thing I use the sample for is to construct the model, okay, the estimate is based on predictions for the whole area. I just, yeah, all right. She's waving her fingers at me. Okay, so you might think that's a little dangerous. I do. Okay, another alternative is to start the same way. Pick my first initial strata closest to the field crew location. Now, for the option two, I'm just going to pick my next stratum that's so far. I might pick the yellow one may be the first stratum. I'm going to randomly find the location for the yellow one. Then I'm going to just pick the other three that are closest. And I continue on in that way. The point is that after each round of sampling, I calculate the mean and the variance and find out where the optimal places are with respect to the strata. Okay? All right. So here are some results. Okay, this represents 1,000 replications, 1,000 random replications. Okay, so these are the field crew locations. This is the sample size. Okay, and again, the sample size depends on the adaptive sequential sampling. So I quit sampling as soon as my criterion is met. This is the mean distance that the field crew has to travel for these 60 plots. Okay, and here's the standard error. And here's the mean volume. You notice that they're all very similar. And this is the standard error. Standard errors are all in a similar range. And in particular, the ratio of the standard errors to the mean is always going to be about 0.05, which is my criterion for stopping sampling. All right, so this is what I get with the adaptive sequential sampling. What's the benefit? Well, what if instead of using this sequential adaptive sampling, I just use simple random sampling. I just randomly pick locations out there. Yeah, I know. I'm going to go over by at least 1 minute. Okay. Okay, so now look at the difference in the mean distances. Okay, doubling the distances. The means are still the same, but the standard errors are quite a lot larger. Okay, which means that in order to get this, I would have had to have double my sample size. Okay, last one. Okay. So what if instead of using this whole model-based approach to inference, I just use the design-based approach? I just calculate the mean in the usual way. Okay, for these same sample sizes, I get just about the same means, but look how much larger the standard errors are. Which means in order to get this standard error, I would have had to get a sample size that's bigger by factors 6, 7, 8, something like that. Okay, conclusions, all right? Sorry. All right, so the first point is, as by comparing the two model-based inferences that uses the LIDAR as auxiliary information, comparing that to the simple random sampling in the last column, we can see that use of the auxiliary information really enhanced the estimation because the uncertainty was reduced by factors of 3, 4, 5. Substantially reduces my sampling costs. Second, model-based adaptive sampling, where each subsequent sample was based on information from the first one, helped me to, again, reduce uncertainties much, much less. Okay, finally, sequential sampling helped me to avoid excessive sampling costs. I don't want to send my crews out to that remote location any more than necessary. Okay, so for remote regions, model-based, adaptive, sequential sampling is a viable alternative if the model relationship is stable through the whole entire study area. That model relationship changes, you're going to have problems. But if you can assume it's constant, stable, you're in good shape. All right. Sorry.
So we've scheduled 20 minutes for discussion. I'm really eager to hear some discussion on other topics, but a question for Ron before we move on to other topics.
Greg.
Yeah, there's that's right. But yeah, for something like that, I guess I should have said that this approach is not restricted to LIDAR and volume or biomass. If you have any kind of an auxiliary variable that you can use to stratify the population, you can make this work. Okay. So whether you're looking at soils, whether you're looking at something else, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, if it takes you a long time to process each stage of data, you're going to have some problems.
Yeah, so but it could be planned so that it's an annual effort and you have time in between to learn from your previous sample. Yeah.
Well, so, I guess.
So somewhat related, I guess, to your last point, if your model relationship is stable over the entire study area, so how do you establish that? Is that going to be a lot of work involved?
And that's why it would be very dangerous to put all your samples in one corner. So whereas if you spread them out like in the second option, now you're getting samples from over the entire study area. And at the very least, as time goes on and you get more of those samples, the model is going to better reflect the entire study area. So that's why the second option is a safer option than the first one.
You could test that with a fake forest.
I have a fake forest. I constructed one too.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you again.